Thanks for taking the time to speak to us here at National Blues Review, Stevie.
Always, mate.
So we're here at the Clunie in Newcastle, and you're about to play tonight. So can you just tell us a bit, like, how's your tour been going?
Tour's been going well. We've done about six or seven dates, I think it is, we're in now, plus another six back in Europe, which went really well. We did a few with Danny Bryant. Do you know Danny?
Yeah, Danny, yes.
Cool. We did three nights with Danny. It's always a challenge.
Yeah.
Keeping up with young Danny. And yeah, this one's been going good. Yeah, all over the UK. As the usual, the zigzag touring schedule, it takes you up, down, up and round.
Yeah.
Rather than a straight line, but no, it's been going well. Song's gone down well.
Great. So your last studio album, The Winds of Life, came out a little while back.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you'd tell us a little bit about that and the inspiration behind it.
Yeah, first of all, well done, you said it right. Most people don't know that word. That album came about just after I was ill. You know, a lot of people know I was ill. I tried to keep it a secret, but other people put it out, so everyone knows now.
Yeah.
But so a lot of that was written about those experiences. You know, it was written about being ill. I was quite... I suppose you could say I was severely ill. You know, it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
And so you have all these thoughts and doubts about the future and will you have one and all that kind of thing. So I got a few songs out of that.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'd actually written about two or three of the songs I'd written many years before. But they just weren't right for Nimmo Brothers stuff. Mm-hmm. It was too country and it was too acoustic.
Yeah.
So they just sat there, you know. And then when this came up, I had the chance to do something in a different style, so I thought, yeah, great.
Yeah.
You know, so most of the inspiration came from hope coming out of kind of doom and gloom, which I never allowed anyway. You know, I'm not a gloomy person. So when I was ill, it was right. What do I have to do to get back on the road again?
Yeah.
That was it. And when's the time scale? So that was it.
And you recorded that out in the US, is that right?
Did that just outside Austin, a place called Dripping Springs. Lovely name. But it's a great place, about 25 minutes outside of Austin. You drive right out of this road, Ranch Road 51 or something, and it's in the middle of nowhere, little studio. Guy that runs it, Pat Mansky, is fantastic guy. Cool dude, young guy, good ears, good temperament, you know, knows when you need a break.
Yeah.
You know, just he gets a sense that I think you could pull this off right now.
Yeah.
Or, nah, we'll do that tomorrow, you know, and that was great work. It was good to go to Austin.
Yeah.
I've never been there before.
I've never been to Austin. No.
You should.
Yeah.
You should go out there. I mean, it really is. I don't really... The States, I can kind of take or leave, to be honest. You know, there's a lot of things out there I don't like, a lot of things I do like.
Mm.
But Austin had this really laid-back vibe about it. You know, kind of weird to... Everyone's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, they just want to get on with life. It's a great place. Yeah.
Cool. So, and from that, you know, now you've got the trio together... Mm. Can you tell us a bit about how you all met?
Well, Matt, as you probably know, Matt's been playing with the Nimmo Brothers for the last 10 years, I think it is, now. We've managed to keep him there.
Yeah.
Tortured him. You know. So when I thought about doing a trio, well, I did the trio, I did some acoustic things first. Because I really like doing the solo acoustic thing.
Yeah.
But to be totally honest, it wasn't pulling enough people in. You know, a lot of people were kind of hesitant and, oh, we don't know what it's going to be. So rather than trying it out, they just didn't bother, you know. And then people that did come thought, well, that was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd get messages from people saying, I really wish I'd gone. I've seen those clips on YouTube. Yeah. But then it's too late because not enough people came, so you can't afford to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, it's too big a risk. So I thought, you know what, people want to hear me play guitar.
Yeah.
That's what they want. That's what I was known for. So I didn't want to just do another band, two guitars, bass, drums. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do a band with keyboards because that would just be kinking.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, well, it's never been my style anyway, you know. So I thought I'll do a trio, but absolutely avoiding the Hendrix, Stevie Ray, down that angle.
Yeah.
You know, just I wanted to do it with Winds of Life songs, because some of them on there I've never been able to play, and write new stuff. And the challenge of filling those spaces, for me, was the thrill of it all, you know.
Yeah.
So Matt I'd known for ages. Craig, the drummer, stepped in with Nimmo Brothers about a year and a half ago. Craig normally played with Ben Poole. He was playing with Ben for a long time.
Yeah.
Still does. And so Craig came in and we got on a personal level very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So, and then his drumming was fantastic. So,
So have you got any plans to go into the studio with this band?
It's just about sorted out now. I think we're going to go in February.
All right.
February is the only chance between now and next summer that all three of us will be available to do it. So the plan is go and do that. We're trying to work out whether it's going to be UK or Austin again.
All right.
I would like to go to Austin and do it.
Yeah.
But we're trying to work it all out. If we can do that, we'll do it in February for a release in probably April, I would say.
Cool.
And then another tour to go with it.
Nice one. So, just a bit about yourself, really. Like, when did you actually start playing the guitar, and have you always played the blues?
I was quite late. I started when I was about 17. I think I started to learn about 16, 17 is when I learned. And I think I saw Clapton live in 85 or something like that. So, yeah. That was kind of like, oh, I like that, you know. And then I suddenly realised that I quite liked this. There was instruments all over our family. You know, every corner you turned in our family, someone played guitar or sang or played piano. So there was always something lying about it. So I tried it and then picked it up. And then it just went. I did 2 years and then I got in a proper band and then started going off. And they turned me into the blues, you know. My mum was Fleetwood Mac. That's what she liked, you know. She always put Fleetwood Mac in. And she always said, you need to hear this guy, Peter Green, you know. You need to hear this. So I listened to that, and I thought, oh, bloody hell, I like that, you know. And then from that, I started looking around. And contrary to what my young brother will tell you, mm-hmm. I turned him on to Free.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I got into Kossoff and Rogers and stuff, you know, and I had the video of the hits, the best of Free. And he was only, God, if I was 17 or 18, he was 11.
Right.
You know, and I remember him watching that, like, who's this? Who's this guy? Oh, I want to do that, you know. Yeah. And from there on, it was Thin Lizzy and all that kind of stuff.
So, in terms of your influences, you just mentioned there, Clapton and Peter Green and Kossoff and stuff. When you tend to play live, you always play Freddie King and you play, Big George.
Yeah.
And that's one... It was quite interesting because I'd never come across Big George before, and the first time we heard you play The Storm, I remember going home that night looking for that song because I was just blown away by it. Can you tell us a bit about that? Because you do often talk about Big George.
George was, unfortunately, George passed away last year, and we're all amazed he lasted that long, to be honest. Right. I mean, he was the biggest, larger-than-life character you've ever met, you know.
Yeah.
But when I was 19 and in this first band, we used to look up to George, you know, and we did a few supports with him. And George saw something in me.
Yeah.
And he used to pull me across. And he was quite intimidating, you know. He would grab you, like, really close to him, you know, and he would shout at you. Like, but he was giving you advice, you know. Yeah. I always remember, he said to me, Stevie, don't let the snakes drag you down. Don't let them take that fire for your belly. Don't let them drag you down, the snakes. And I was like, what? He scared the shit out of me, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just a bit afraid, you know. And then a few years later, I realised what he meant. You know, it was like, this whole business is going to try and tame you a little bit, not let you do what you want to do, tell you need to do that.
Yeah.
The charlatans and the people who are behind it all are going to try and take this and that for you. And he was basically telling me, don't let them.
Yeah.
And in one of the Nimble Brothers songs, In My Mind, that I don't know if you know it, but that I wrote that one, and one of the lines is, don't let the snakes drag you down, you know, to tear your soul apart. And that came from that conversation with George. So he directly, like, influenced me on every level when it came to guitar playing, sounds, and songwriting.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. I wish more people had seen him.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, you're keeping his music alive.
Not a lot of people know.
As soon as I got home, literally, I looked at the track, went on Spotify, found his album.
Did you find it?
Yeah, I love it.
Because you can get it off his website. Yeah. Do a download on
it's so good, that track
I've seen him play that track live so many times, and he it was mesmerising. I mean, absolutely mesmerising sometimes, you know. You're watching the guy and great days going back to that.
For anyone listening, we're talking about a band called Big George and the Business and the track's called The Storm. Look it up, it's amazing. So, recently you've been out with the Nimmo Brothers only a couple of months back. Any plan to do anything more?
We go back out in January. We're heading over to Europe for, I think there's 17 dates or some of that in Europe in January, all over Belgium, Holland, Luxembourg, Germany, Austria, I think.
Yeah.
So it's not too bad, you know. And then we'll do another 5 to 7 days in Europe again in May, June.
Right.
And then mid-September to the end of October is the UK. Right. For the Nimmo. So there's one big UK tour next year, and it's the 20th anniversary next year for working with my brother. So,
it must be difficult. You guys trying to get time together now with Alan's always out on the road. And
well, the thing is, we've always been busy, you know, and I've been living out in France for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So when we're not playing, we don't see each other, you know. And it's been kind of weird this time because we're going longer now without seeing each other.
Yeah.
Because the tours are kind of spread out, you know. And that's kind of strange. It's the first time in a long, long time that we haven't spent so much time together.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see him, though. I saw him in Glasgow on Monday, and it was great to see him, you know. But we're all just so busy. You just have to...
That's a good thing, though.
It is a good thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's always good to tune. He says it, you know, King's going really well. This is starting to go. This is a new product for me. You know, it's just... You have to work from the ground up, push it, trying to get people to come out and trust it, come out, support it, and then it goes from there, hopefully. Yeah. But we've both always said, we still love doing Nimmo Brothers stuff. There's no way we're stopping doing it yet, you know, but it has to be reduced at the moment just to allow time.
Cool. So for all the guitar heads out there, can you tell us a bit about your setup?
Setup, for the last God knows how many years, I've used orange amps.
Yeah.
I mean... I have a deal with Orange now. I'm one of what they call an ambassador.
Yeah.
But I played Orange from those days when I was 19. And I still have the old amps. They're just too loud.
Yeah.
And I've tried every amp brand, I think, under the sun. And none of them come close. I mean, I'm not just pushing a product. Yeah. It's just I can't get anything else to sound as good. Mm-hmm. And recently, that's 2 years now, I think, I've been using the Line 6 M13 pedal board stopbox. Yeah. And that is a phenomenal piece of kit. I mean, it really is. Everything in one box. When I do Nimmo shows, it gets a bit of a kicking with a sweat dripping off into it, and it kind of stodges up and switches off. But that's it. Guitar-wise, on this tour, I'm running the, I call it the Bastard Caster.
Yeah.
You know, it's been built up from all sorts of stuff. You know, it's a basic Strat, left-handed neck, Texas Specials, Tone Zone pickup. I've rewired it so there's no selector switch. It's a chicken knob thing. And the PRS, Bernie Marsden. It's a Bernie Martin. That's great. Yeah. Cheap and cheerful.
Yeah.
And a lovely, lovely tone. Wonderful guitar.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's it. Nice and simple.
Nice one. So, if you could collaborate with any one artist, who would it be?
Dead or alive.
I got Ben Poole said the same thing.
It makes a difference.
If you could collaborate with any one artist. Actually, both.
Both, right. Yeah. Are you talking collaboration here, or are you talking just playing on a stage?
Collaboration. Yeah.
So I'm looking for someone that I love listening to who wrote really good tunes.
Yeah.
Probably, I'd probably go right back in it. Thin Lizzy or someone like that. Phil Lynott.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to have been involved in those kind of writing.
Yeah.
Stuff that's still in love with you and all that.
Yeah.
That'd have been good. And getting on a stage would have been good as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Probably love him as well.
Yeah. Peter Green would have been good back in the heyday.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not so much collaboration. That was just pure blues.
Yeah.
more modern ones. I'm kind of more acoustic people. There's a guy called Amos Lee that I really like, an acoustic American guy. Yeah. You know, I'd love to do it. That would be great for me.
Yeah.
You know. And then getting on a stage. It'd be nice to go on a stage with like Johnny Lang or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I like Johnny.
Yeah.
So when you're out on the road, do you listen to a lot of music? You know, if so, who are you listening to these days?
I listen to loads of stuff. I travel a lot, you know, just in and out of going to the first show and the last show.
Yeah.
That's where most of my travelling is. And I listen to a lot of Amos Lee.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of country music, like more modern country stuff. Zac Brown Band.
Yeah.
I love all that stuff, you know. Don't tell too many people, Lady Antebellum.
Right.
You know? But I love all that stuff. Yeah. I think the musicianship is phenomenal. You know, the songs are catchy. What was I listening to? I was listening to Ed Sheeran the other day.
Yeah.
His first one. Yeah, that's a good Train album. Mm-hmm. So all that kind of stuff. I very rarely listen to blues, surprisingly.
Yeah, it's cool because, I mean, I was talking to Kenny Wayne Shepherd the other week, and he said, like, you know, when he's on the road, he just doesn't even listen to anything.
Yeah,
he's pretty
much,
you know, he's too busy playing music.
Yeah.
But I know... because he spent so much time travelling.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to music all day, every day.
Yeah, well, if I'm travelling on my own, I listen to music at that point. When I'm in the van driving around, it's kind of the radio goes on, you know, or even just turn it off sometimes. And we had the last few shows we've done, he's had his iPad out, old Craig there. And we've been watching Only Fools and Horses.
There you go.
It breaks can't up the monotony, you know. I listen to all sorts, you know. I love music. I mean, there's always music on somewhere.
I mean, I've got a really diverse taste. Whenever anybody asks me what I listen to, it's pretty much anything from Miles Davis to Metallica and everything in between.
I go back to once, you know, all the Eagles. No matter where I'm a fighter, there's an Eagles album somewhere on whatever method of device I've got. There'll be Eagles there somewhere.
Cool. So, last question I've got for you. What would be like your dream gig if you could play anywhere? Or what would
it be? When I was younger, it used to be I always wanted to play the Glasgow Barrowlands. Have you ever been to the Barrowlands?
No. Yeah, I've heard
back,
a lot of
back in the day, the Barrowlands was just amazing. 2,000 people in this shithole venue. But all the good ones are like that. Yeah. You know? And when they bounced, it was an old dance floor, so the floor was sprung. So when everyone bounced, the whole place bounced, you know. And I always wanted to play that, and then I played it supporting BBM. Remember Gary Moore, Ginger Baker, and Jack Bruce? And it was sold out, you know, and it was amazing. But we had a bad experience with it. We were the support band. We got treated like duck. Couldn't turn your amp up. We played a mediocre sound and set, and it really spoiled it. But I could say I played the balance, you know. I think for a modern one, I'd love to see what it's like playing one of these massive festivals, just to see what it's like with that kind of sea of people out front.
Yeah.
And the power of that rig going right out, you know, like one of the V festivals or something. Hyde Park, but to be honest, gigs become gigs, you know? They just all become the same, you know. And people ask me a lot, it must be daunting playing in front of maybe a big festival, 10,000 people. Not really, no. It's
do you approach every show in the same
way? I've never been, I've never had stage fright, I've never had anything like that. I just walk on, and it doesn't make any difference to me where I'm, you know. I find it more intimidating playing to half-empty room than I do playing to 20,000 people. You know, that is more difficult. And if anyone asks me to play guitar in their home, when I'm sitting amongst company, I can't do it. I become very, very shy and I don't want to do it, you know.
That's cool.
But, so that's...
That's great.
How it is, man.
Thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
No worries, mate. It's a pleasure.
It's a lot of fun. So we'll see you tonight.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
No worries.